Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
Do you need to let customers switch to a voice call without leaving your app and then use AI to answer their questions instantly over the phone? Vonage does that. With Vonage Voice API, you get click-to-call connectivity in your app or website. And you can connect to customer data to provide more personalized service. Create custom AI voice experiences, even if you're not a developer. If you want more people talking about your business, get Vonage Voice API at Vonage.com.
This is the place where the forest meets the sea. You know, many of us think of a national forest as just a bunch of trees, but this is so much more than that.
This is Amy Gulick. She's a writer and photographer, and she's taking us into the Tongass National Forest in southeast Alaska.
So you'll see very steep forested mountains that seem to just rise out of the ocean, and that's on the mainland. And then just off that mainland, there are thousands and thousands of forested islands, and those are also part of the Tongass. So this is a place where the forest meets the sea, you know, where waterways are weaving amongst all of these islands. It's a very wet, cool, temperate rainforest, very misty, like low clouds will, you know, just kind of hover just above the treetops. But that's what I absolutely love about it. I think when I'm sitting on salmon spawning streams, what I love about that experience is that nothing else matters except what is happening right before me. And whether that's a lot of action, you know, meaning a lot of salmon are streaming by and there's a lot of bears around me, that's actually what I hope is going to be happening, you know, so I can be photographing that. But there are, you know, quieter moments too, where, you know, there's not a lot of bears around. And that's when I really start looking around and I really take in, you know, everything. So I take in the sounds alone are amazing. You've got, you know, ravens, you know, with these kind of harpy screams that they do, and they do these croaking sounds. You're hearing that like kind of reverberate all throughout the forest. You're hearing kind of the chittering of bald eagles, kind of the screaming and the screeching of gulls. And then what I absolutely love are the sounds that the salmon make, like the splash of their tails. If they hit a shallow spot, you know, in the stream, which they often do, to where half their body is out of the water and the other half is, you know, wriggling hard trying to get into a deeper part of the stream, you'll hear that tail slapping, you know, out of the water, and, you know, just hear their body wriggling. You know, a lot of times I'll just close my eyes and just listen to all these sounds. You can just hear, you know, how alive this place is.
Amy Gulick is a photographer and author of Salmon in the Trees, Life in Alaska's Tongass Rainforest. The Tongass is one of the largest intact temperate rainforests in the world. It's also a national forest, not a national park, and as such, the Tongass National Forest must serve many purposes. Well, last month, the Trump administration, despite heavy opposition, opened up more than half of the Tongass to logging and other development, reversing federal protections that had been in place for almost 20 years. So from NPR and WBUR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today on Point, we'll explore a critical forest's complex future. And joining us to help us do that is Joel Jackson. He's the tribal president of the Organized Village of Cake, and he spent his whole life in the Tongass National Forest. He joins us from Cake. Joel, welcome to the program.
Happy to be on the program.
Also with us is John Shane. He's a professor of wildlife biology at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He's worked with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and is the author of Tongass Odyssey, Seeing the Forest Ecosystem Through the Politics of Trees. John, welcome to you.
Thank you very much. It's great to be on.
So, Joel, I wonder if you could just start us off by talking a little bit about the importance of the Tongass Forest.
Well, the Tongass Forest, to our native people that live within the Tongass, is very important for many reasons, spiritually, culturally. We continue to practice our way of life within these forests. When we step into these forests, I always like to describe it as walking into one of the greatest cathedrals you'll ever visit in your life. The trees are so tall and magnificent when you walk in there. And you think about it, it took thousands of years for this forest, this old growth forest, to reach this perfection where just the right amount of light comes through the canopy to the forest floor, and it has a wide variety of plants that we use not only for medicine, but we gather our berries. It's just a magnificent place to ground yourself once you walk into these forests.
I'm seeing the cathedral in my mind's eye as you describe it, Joel. John, so it's the largest intact, or one of the largest intact, temperate rainforests in the world. I've heard the Tongass described as the lungs of North America. Can you tell us about its ecological importance?
Yes. Temperate rainforests are rare globally compared to tropical rainforest. And the North Pacific temperate rainforest is the largest of the roughly six temperate rainforests around the globe. It starts from Northern California, the redwoods, and runs all the way up through Oregon and Washington, British Columbia, Southeast Alaska, up into South Central Alaska. And the forest to the south in the Pacific Northwest and Southern British Columbia have largely been logged. So those forests are second or third growth forests, not old growth forest. The amount of old growth in the southern portion of the North Pacific temperate rainforest are really scattered fragments of what they once were. And in combination with northern British Columbia, the Great Bear Rainforest and the Tongass, this is the largest intact temperate rainforest on Earth. And the Tongass in particular still has some of the natural diversity that portions of British Columbia have lost. The Tongass is really very special.
Mm. And how much of a carbon sink, then, is this forest because it's so large and so intact?
Well, the Tongass is the most important carbon sink of all the forests in the United States. It stores more carbon than any other national forest. And roughly, scientists have estimated that 8% of the total carbon stored in the U.S. comes from the Tongass. So it's really very significant.
Okay. So, Joel, let me turn back to you, because these old growth stands that you're talking about, red cedar, yellow cedar, Sitka spruce, western hemlock amongst them, what has the Trump administration opted to change? It's overturning a rule that's been placed on the forest since 2001 about road building. Can you explain a little bit about the change that has happened?
In the past or present day?
Present day. Yeah, the recent change that the Trump administration has imposed on the Tongass.
Oh, okay. They opted to open it up completely to road building and logging. I think the bottom line for this whole thing is mining that they're looking at, extracting rare earth minerals.
Mining. And in order to get to the places that the mining companies wanted access, they need to be able to build roads. And until last month, there had been a rule in place that had prevented road building in the Tongass Forest. Do I have that right, Joel?
Well, that's the lie that's being told all over.
Okay.
Under the current roadless, or the roadless rule before it was overturned, there was building roads for mining was allowable. Also building roads for between communities and for providing cheaper electricity. That was all allowed, as well as recreation. And even logging was allowed, but on current roads systems.
I see. Okay, so John, then help us further understand here, because last month, the Forest Service did announce, right, that they were going to overturn this 2001 protection that had been put in place and open up some 9 million, at least 9 million acres in the Tongass to logging and other forms of development. So what exactly has happened?
Well, technically, there are roughly 9 million acres of the Tongass. The Tongass is the largest national forest in the U.S., almost 17 million acres, roughly the size of West Virginia. So the 9 million acres of roadless really includes lots of different kinds of habitats, from glaciers and mountaintops and muskeg bogs and forest. And it's really important to understand that even though the Tongass is the largest national forest, only about half of the land base of the Tongass has forest, and only about 30% of the Tongass has what's defined as commercial forest land. And for the last 60 plus years, the Forest Service and the timber industry has targeted logging on the most productive forest lands across the Tongass. And what we're concerned about now, plus what Joel is talking about relative to the mining, is that new logging will go into the best areas that still have big trees. And big trees have always been rare on the Tongass. And those are the areas that are the most important habitat for salmon and wildlife.
Well, John and Joel, stand by here for just a second, because we want to learn a lot more about the changes that could be coming to the Tongass National Forest. So we'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG, or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This hour, we are exploring the complex future of the largest intact temperate rainforest in the world, the Tongass National Forest in southeast Alaska. Last month, the Trump administration and the U.S. Forest Service opted to overturn a 2001 protection on the Tongass that prevented the building of new roads in the forest. They overturned that protection, and now it's opened up some 9 million plus acres to logging and development there. I'm joined today by Joel Jackson. He's tribal president of the Organized Village of Cake. He's with us from Cake, Alaska. John Shane is also with us from Anchorage. He's a wildlife biologist and author and a professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And we wanted to get as many voices, Alaskan voices, in this conversation as possible. And one of them is Gordon Chu. He owns the Tenneke Logging Company, a small family business located in Chichagof Island. Now, they are a small company, so they have been selectively harvesting trees in the Tongass since 2008.
I'm looking across 3.5 miles where my logging camp is across Tenneke Inlet. A day of logging requires us to get in a boat after packing up food and tools and equipment and then crossing the inlet and then driving up to our camp and outfitting for whatever activity we're going to do that day, whether it's falling or limbing or yarding trees to the road or loading and driving trees down to the log sorting yards. Selective logging is a thinning process. It's not a mass extraction process, and it can be done in a sustainable fashion, and I believe very strongly that we're doing that. The beauty of it is that when you extract a tree, especially one that's near another tree, you've decreased the competition between those two, and the other tree will jump for the light, for the resources, the moisture. And it also gives a chance for the understory to grow, the berry plants and the other edibles that the deer and other organisms depend on. We don't want to be a part of any destruction here. We want to be a part of preserving this, because if we're in this for the long run, this needs to be preserved. We're sequestering carbon here, unbelievable quantities of carbon. There's a long history of logging, and it's a typical boom and bust cycle that's happened here in the Tongass. Hand loggers started taking trees they could pitch into the water and fall from cliffs to get them straight into the water. And local mills were established. They were pretty much driven out with the advent of pulp mills, which did massive amounts of damage to the Tongass. A third of the old growth trees were cut down through that era. It's a travesty, in my opinion. So then the pulp mills eventually closed down for various reasons. Their 50-year contracts ran out. The large timber sales era, those days have just ended. You know, it was a big crisis because there were hundreds of jobs in Sitka at the pulp mill just gone. You know, what were these people going to do? Well, it all settled down and people have their shops and they've gone into tourism and day charter fishing. And, you know, it's not like everybody just gives up and dies when the world changes. So we feel very much like stewards here in Tenneke Inlet. This is a very, very special place. This is what the earth used to be like everywhere. And the bigger threat to the national forest here are mining interests. And these people have a lot of money and they can build roads. And I think the effort might be to open the Tongass up more for mineral extraction and tree extraction. But we'll have to wait for the future to see what that was all about.
That's Gordon Chu, owner of the Tenneke Logging Company, located in Chichagof Island in Alaska. Now, we're going to talk about the mining companies here in just a moment. But Joel, I wanted to ask you this. Your people have been there the longest. They have the deepest relationship with the Tongass Forest. You heard Gordon there talk about the change in the timber industry in Alaska over time. I'm seeing that the timber industry is 1% of Alaska's economy right now. So how much does the reasoning of opening up roads for tree extraction, I mean, does that make any sense to you in terms of a reason to make this big rule change there?
No, not economically or job wise. The last remaining logging operations, they have their own crews that they bring in, and they won't hire anybody from our community. They don't even buy anything hardly from our communities because they bring in everything that they need. So it makes no sense to us to have them come in here and do any logging around any. I've been in the logging industry before, and most of the timber that's left was left there for a reason, because it just didn't have the value of the trees they extracted before. So now the trees that are left are less value. And we've had timber sales around us that have sat on the shelves at the Forest Service for years and years because nobody could afford to come in and log these areas.
Huh. Well, we should note that during the review and public comment period, when the Forest Service was thinking about changing the roadless rule, I'm seeing here that 96% of the input they got from the public was in opposition to this change, and that even some groups, one of them Taxpayers for Common Sense, did an analysis, and they found that it, in fact, would be more economically efficient – this is according to the Washington Post – to hold timber sales where there were already roads, really obviating the need for new roads. And so, John, let me ask this of you, because the Forest Service actually acknowledged that, saying that their new plan, quote, reflects a different policy perspective on the roadless management issue rather than a change in the underlying facts and circumstances. Do you want to comment on that?
Yes, and I totally agree with what Gordon has said and Joel. I think there's a key element that everybody needs to understand. The big trees, the money-making trees on the Tongass, have always been the target of the industry. They were always rare. Today, they're even more rare. What I believe the exemption to the roadless rule will do, it will allow the industry and the Forest Service to go in and target these very few stands of ancient trees, the big trees, the money-making trees, but also the very best salmon habitat and the very best black-tailed deer habitat and marbled murrelets, a little seabird that nests on tops of old-growth trees. And that's what ecologists are very concerned about. So the vast Tongass forest, the big trees that provide very important fish and wildlife habitat and also big money to the industry, those are rare, and those will be the target now with the roadless rule exemption. So that's a real concern. And another key element to add, and Joel referenced this early on when he talked about walking through the old growth, and it was like a cathedral. What happens when you clear cut, when you take all the trees out at once? The trees then grow back, all the same age, the same size, and it blocks the light out. So these new second growth stands are virtually biological deserts. There's no food in those stands. And I like to compare that. An analogy I would make is walking in an old growth is like being in a cathedral with light coming, streaming in from the sides and the high canopy, compared to walking into a second growth, which is like being in a dark basement apartment. It's night and day. And that's one of the real issues to be concerned about with losing the roadless rule.
Yeah. Well, Joel, as you said, there are timber sales that are on the shelf. They've been sitting on the shelf with the Forest Service. And I mean, the timber industry in Alaska is kind of a shadow of what it once was. I quoted that 1% number in terms of the timber industry's fraction of Alaska's overall economy, whereas things like fishing and tourism are more than quarter of Alaska's – more than a quarter of Alaska's economy. So let's – we're going to talk about those areas in just a second. But you did mention mining. What is it that the mining companies would want access to? What's in the ground in the Tongass that's so valuable?
Well, there's what they call that rare earth minerals, and that's down on Prince of Wales to the south of us. And there's a bunch of small mining claims on our island, Kupernaw Island, that right now the state is looking to build or repair old logging roads and connect cake with those old logging roads. And I can only assume they're doing that for the mining industry that they want to open it up to.
And John, how large is the mining industry in Alaska?
I'm not a mining expert. Okay. I'm an ecologist. But there are several very significant mines up around Juneau, the Kensington mine, which is primarily a gold and silver mine, and then on Admiralty Island, and that's where I did my brown bear and black-tailed deer research. Northern Admiralty Island, the Greens Creek mine, is, I believe, the largest silver mine in the United States. Mm. Both of those mines are underground mines, so you know they don't cover a large expanse of tearing up the earth on the surface, but you still have to be concerned about tailings ponds and water quality and so on. The rare earth metals that Joel is referencing down around Ketchikan, I'm less familiar than that, but I do know that that's on the horizon and something that the industry is thinking about.
Right. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Well, this is a really complex story that involves so many different aspects of life in Alaska. And I just want to let people know that we also reached out to Ucor Rare Metals Incorporated, Hecla Mining Company, to the U.S. Forest Service, to the Northern Dynasty Partnership, to Pepec Alaska Logging, Alcan Timber, the Alaska Forest Association, Sea Alaska, Allied Timber as well. Didn't hear back from most of those places. We reached out to Alaska Congressman Don Young, Governor Mike Dunleavy, Senator Dan Sullivan, who was quoted in the Washington Post as saying, how the hell do you have an economy if you have no roads? Didn't hear back from any of them. We also reached out to Senator Lisa Murkowski as well. She declined to join us live today, but she did send us this statement.
A full exemption from the roadless rule means access to more affordable and renewable energy to power homes and schools, access to technology at a time when more Americans are logging online for healthcare and education, and access for transportation and recreation to promote jobs and economic activity in the region, all while ensuring continued good stewardship of our lands and our waters. I want to thank the USDA and Forest Service team for recognizing that one-size-fits-all federal policies are not appropriate in Alaska and sometimes simply do not fit at all.
That's Senator Lisa Murkowski. She sent us that audio statement. Joel, do you want to respond to that?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Almost everything she mentioned there is allowable. Was allowable under the roadless rule before it was overturned. And that was what I made reference to a little while ago, was those lies that are being told not only by the politicians, but by the Forest Service, the USDA, our governor. Almost everything she said there is allowable under the roadless rule. When I was in Washington, D.C., there, Congressman Don Young basically said the same thing, but he didn't stick around to hear my testimony. So, most of that is lies.
Well, John, you heard the senator talk about access to more affordable and renewable energy, transportation and recreation to promote jobs and economic activity in the region while ensuring continued good stewardship. Your thoughts on that?
Well, Joel is right. As far as I know, I think that hydropower, access to communities and so on, there are allowances within the roadless rule to accommodate those issues. So I think what is missing here is a recognition that the Tongass National Forest is completely unique in the U.S., if not the world, in still being, even though there's been a lot of logging, but we still have intact watersheds with all their ecological parts. There are few places left on Earth where you have productive salmon, world-class salmon runs, millions of salmon returning, all five species in the thousands of rivers and streams that come through the Tongass old growth. We have tremendous brown and black bear populations, and the economy of Southeast really depends on having a vibrant, productive forest ecosystem. And the roadless rule really places that, the exemption really places those things at risk.
Well, John and Joel, hang on here for a second. One more quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a lot more about the uncertain future of the Tongass National Forest. This is On Point.
A new equation for switching on outcomes is here from PwC. It's human-led and tech-powered. It's PwC with Oracle, SAP, Salesforce, and Workday. It's PwC with Microsoft, AWS, and Google. Simplify your systems and amplify your results. Switch on outcomes with PwC and their alliances. Learn more at pwc.com.
Listen closely. As a master painter carefully brushes Benjamin Moore Regal Select down the seam of the wall. It's like poetry in motion. Benjamin Moore, see the love.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This hour we are exploring the uncertain future of the largest intact temperate rainforest in the world. It's the Tongass National Forest in Southeast Alaska. And last month, the Trump administration overturned a rule that had been in place since 2001 and now has effectively opened up 9+ million acres of the Tongass to logging and development. I'm joined today by Joel Jackson. He's tribal president of the Organized Village of Cake. He's with us from Cake, Alaska. And John Shane also joins us. He's a wildlife biologist and author, worked for 20 years as a scientist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and is a professor of wildlife biology, or served as a professor of wildlife biology at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Joel, at the risk of asking kind of a really obtuse question, I'm trying to understand here who are the people or the groups? Is there anyone other than maybe the large-scale corporate logging companies or the mining companies? Are there any other groups that stand to benefit from the roadless rule change in the Tongass? I mean, Senator Murkowski claims that it's going to help Alaskan families access renewable energy? I mean, or is this really a change that's going to benefit a few at the cost of many, if not all of us, given the ecological importance of the forest?
Well, that's exactly the you hit it right on the head there. There's very few people that will benefit from this other than like the mining, the logging industry, you know, that 1% of the economy in Alaska. Our value of the Tungus National Forest is leaving it intact, and our salmon streams are so important to our communities. We look forward to those salmon returning year after year. Right now, with this pandemic, it's become more essential to have that salmon to get us through the winter months. We do have some grocery stores, but the prices in these stores have went very high. So we have to depend on living off the land in rural communities in order to make it by.
John, did you want to comment on that?
Well, Joel is right on target. Salmon is a major economic driver of Southeast Alaska. And when you look at the history of salmon around the globe, you know, the Atlantic salmon is functionally extinct. The Pacific salmon once were so important in Northern California and Oregon and Washington. The Columbia River was a huge producer of salmon. And in those areas, salmon are really a drop in the bucket from what they used to be. In Southeast Alaska, we still have very productive salmon runs. And salmon really drive the ecosystem. I think of salmon as being the anchor of biological productivity in South Coastal Alaska and the Tongass. There are over, aside from the people and the commercial harvest and, of course, the subsistence use of salmon, there are 100 species of birds and mammals and fish and marine and terrestrial invertebrates that use salmon for their nutrition. And salmon, without salmon, you really wouldn't have as productive a system as you have on the Tongass. And everything's connected on the Tongass. Mm-hmm. Amy Gulick talked about the salmon in the trees, the marine-derived nitrogen that comes into the system every year in this pulse of salmon during spawning. Is taken up by the trees. You can identify marine nitrogen in the needles of spruce and hemlock and cedar, and in the leaves of devil's club, in the hair of bears. So salmon is really important, and I just can't emphasize enough how everything's connected on the Tongass, one of the few places on Earth where all of these connections are still working.
Well, you know, the specter of the current state of Alaska's economy, Joel, as you know, is hovering over all of this. It's what elected officials from Alaska talk about. And I just want to remind listeners that we did reach out to several mining companies, the U.S. Forest Service, several major logging companies, and Congressman Don Young, Governor Mike Dunleavy, Senator Dan Sullivan, and Senator Lisa Murkowski. Murkowski was the only one who got back to us with that statement you heard a little earlier, but we didn't hear back affirmatively from any of those other people. But in the Washington Post, Robert Venables, the executive director of the Southeast Conference, he talked about how the economy of Southeast Alaska has really been hurt bad by the pandemic. For example, the cruise industry has basically been wiped away. And he said that that the Trump administration's action to overturn the roadless rule, quote, is some common sense or offers some common sense near-term relief. near term being the key there. So I wanted to also just take a step back and hear from another Alaskan about how communities there have gone through previous major economic changes. It'll help us understand a little bit about what the future of the region might be. So, for example, let's listen to Brenda Schwartz-Jaeger. She's a fourth-generation Alaskan.
Most of my grandparents and my ancestors before me here were guiding big game hunts and fishing and hunting marine mammals and trapping and maybe even some logging and things like that. And mining, those were your choices to make a living if you lived in the Tongass 100 years ago, even 50 years ago. And so I am fortunate enough to have some different choices now. I remember growing up here as a child when we were in the heyday of the timber and there was big foreign ships anchored up out front and we were cutting down thousands and thousands of acres of beautiful old growth forest, barely manipulating them at all, basically sending nearly raw logs overseas for decades at kind of like maybe not so much benefit to us. And what we're left with is the scarred hillsides.
And of course, as we've talked about, the timber industry in Alaska has declined. But Brenda says she and fellow Alaskans figured out how to make a living in other ways. Brenda's a commercial fisherwoman, a watercolor artist, and a backcountry guide.
I spend my days with visitors, a handful of visitors in the Tongass and on the waterways, and I don't take a lot away other than some awesome photographs and great memories. And, you know, hopefully offer people an opportunity to really get in touch with these wild spaces that we have left that can be kind of life-changing and a healing experience for a lot of people. And so I don't understand why the U.S. Forest Service and Department of Agriculture seems so bent on continually running back to the timber industry. It's like, why don't we encourage some of this other recreational activity that's less impactful?
Now, Brenda told us she's not opposed to all timber harvesting, but she says it needs to be done in a way that recognizes the deep interconnections we've been talking about in the entire Tongass ecosystem.
We're starting to understand that the fish are connected to the trees, you know, and the trees are connected to the river, and that it all is woven carefully together, and we can't pull one of those threads without unraveling something. And so I think whatever we do with the Tongass, we should do it very carefully and very thoughtfully.
That's Brenda Schwartz-Jaeger. She's a fourth generation Alaskan. So Joel Jackson, I wanted to hear from you about this, about sort of the multiple ups and downs that people, including your people, have gone through as the economy has changed, as rules have changed, as resources have changed in Alaska. I want to hear you talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, in the early days around our area, salmon was the key. We had a salmon cannery that operated and employed most of the community. And then logging came along, and they operated alongside the salmon canneries. So we had a very good economy going. I mean, we had plenty of jobs. Everybody that wanted to work had a job. Of course, everybody knows that the logging is a boom and bust industry. And that unfortunately happened. And also the fishing, the prices for salmon had dropped, and the other species that were driving our fishing around here. At our highest point, we had over 20 or more what they call seine boats. These are the bigger boats, 58 up to 58 feet in length. And during that time, when the fishing was really good, you know, we had all those boats, and these were all family-owned boats. Now, in the current day, we have two of those boats operating out of our area. So, you know, it's like other people have said, it you know, salmon is connected to everything. And as Native people, that is very important to us because we respect everything that's out there. And we know that everything is interconnected. And to pull one of those things away would, like the previous lady said, it would start to unravel everything else.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Well, we've got a question coming in from a listener on Twitter who asks, can this decision be halted or overturned by the next administration? And interestingly, another On Point listener offers a potential answer to that question. This is David. He lives in Vermont. He called us saying that he was a wildlife research scientist in the Tongass from 1991 to 2013. And here's what he told us.
It's been a tragedy developing over 50, 60 years. And unfortunately, I don't see much change occurring in the future, particularly because Joe Biden will need Lisa Murkowski to be of some support in the Senate to get anything done. And Lisa is one of the prime backers of taxpayer-subsidized logging in the Tongass National Forest. So don't expect to see big changes, although I believe the tragedy will continue unabated.
Well, we don't know what's going to happen politically in the future. But John Shane, let me ask you this. If indeed we do start seeing accelerated development, logging, mining, what have you, in the Tongass, what is the impact of that going to be on the forest, on the people who depend on it, on the rest of us in this country?
Well, that's a great question, Meghna. And I think that a key issue that everybody needs to understand is that old growth forest ecosystems are non-renewable when they're clear cut. What Gordon Chu described in Tenneke is not clear cutting, and that is reasonably compatible. But clear cutting a non-renewable resource, trees that are up to 1,000 years old, and then cutting them again in 100 years, that simply is non-renewable. And I think a key factor here, another key factor, is that the last 4 years has been tough on science. This administration has not really listened to scientists. And the scientific community is very clear that old growth forest ecosystems have great value, from carbon storage to help on climate change to producing tourism and salmon, seafood, the seafood industry. And the scientific community has spoken out. Two former chiefs of the Forest Service, both scientists, have said it's time to end old growth clear cutting. And in 2015, seven scientific societies came out with a strong letter to the Secretary of Agriculture recommending an end to old-growth clear-cutting on the Tongass. The Tongass National Forest is the only national forest still clear-cutting old-growth. Hmm.
Well, with that, we're going to have to wrap up today's conversation. John Shane, wildlife biologist and author who worked for 20 years as a scientist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and author of Tongass Odyssey, Seeing the Forest Ecosystem Through the Politics of Trees. Thank you so much for joining us, John.
Thank you.
And Joel Jackson, tribal president of the Organized Village of Cake, with us from Cake, Alaska. Joel, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on your program and listening to our point of view.
Well, one last note here before we fully wrap up. The sounds that you've been hearing this hour, the birds, the water, the fish, they were recorded by Richard Nelson, the legendary Alaskan anthropologist, conservationist, and writer who, among other things, hosted the syndicated radio show Encounters, which aired on public radio stations nationwide. Nelson died last year. But these recordings accompany Amy Gulick's book, Salmon in the Trees, Life in Alaska's Tongass Rainforest. So we want to say thank you to Amy for permission to use the sounds and for sharing some of her photographs of the Tongass National Forest. You can see them at onpointradio.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can profit motive save the planet? Is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment? How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or environmental social governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits. So you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.